Broadcasting from Youngstown, Ohio, this is the MV Red Podcast, the show where we talk about news and politics impacting the Mahoning Valley, the state of Ohio, and the USA. If you want to subscribe to our podcast, find us on your favorite podcast streaming app or visit our website, www.mvred.com. If you want to share your opinion with us, please email info@mvred.com, as we would love to hear from you. Now, let's get things started. Here are your hosts, Michael Metzinger and Dane Davis.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the sixth episode of the MV Red Podcast. My name is Michael Metzinger, and joining me is my co-host, Dane Davis. We're approaching Christmas here, and it's been a very busy time, I'm sure, for each of us with Christmas approaching. And then it's also been extremely busy on the political front. So we thought it was a good time to have another episode of our podcast to talk about President Trump and him being impeached by the House yesterday evening, December 18th. We'll also talk a little bit about the Democratic debates. There's actually one taking place as we speak. And then I think we'll talk a little bit about Tim Ryan actually getting a formidable challenger in the 2020 Ohio 13th congressional race. Christina Hagan, a former Ohio state rep, decided yesterday that she filed the papers to run as a Republican. I think there's like a total of 7 Republicans running, but she's truly the one who has the absolute best chance. So let's get going. So Dane, how you been?
I'm doing really well. It's a Merry Christmas. Things are, you know, doing well here in the Davis household, and lots going on in the political world, and I'm ready. I'm fired up and ready to talk about the political scene. We've got a little bit of action. I have to say it was slow the past couple of weeks, but it's gone spicier with impeachment yesterday, the debates tonight. It's like one final spice push before Christmas and New Year's. And so I'm ready. I'm ready, Michael. How are you?
Yeah, no, I'm ready too. And it's interesting you say that, because although there was a lot of stuff going on politically over the last few weeks, it really was those impeachment hearings, and I guess we could start talking about that. I listened to them pretty closely. I thought they were snooze fest. I thought the Democrats did a very poor job convincing the American people that President Trump was worthy of impeachment. The idea of using all these people who heard this through this person or heard that, and what they heard did not jive with what was in the two call transcripts. That it's just been mind-boggling to me that we went down this path, despite the fact we actually have the transcripts of these phone calls. So I think the hearings were snooze fest. But nonetheless, I was quite surprised that Nancy Pelosi actually went forward with this. And that's something I did want to talk about and hear your thoughts on that.
Well, so, Michael, maybe I'm very low IQ, but I just don't get impeachment. I haven't gotten it since day one. I really don't understand it, okay? And again, maybe call me a shill, call me a Trump flunky, call me what you will, but I can't figure impeachment out. And the reason why I can't figure out impeachment, because I don't understand what the crime was. I just don't get it, right? So, Listen, if this is what would let me give you a hypothetical scenario. I'm running for president, or I'm the president of the United States, and you're running against me, okay? And you're my challenger. And of course, I can't use the American intelligence agencies to spy on my opponent, right? But imagine I went to my buddies in, say, Angola, and said, hey, use your, you know, intel apparatus to spy on my opponent and then give me that intel, right? Or else I won't give you any military aid in Angola, right? That would be wrong and impeachable, and I get that. But say you had a crackhead son who's a total degenerate, who impregnated 2 women at the same time, none of whom were his wife, cheated on his wife with his brother's widow, right?
How sick is
it's
that?
It's totally sick. This is a horrible human being by any stretch of the imagination. Born into wealth and power and privilege and just makes a total shit show of his life. Has no credible background whatsoever in the natural gas industry. And yet gets an, what was it, $80,000 a month job on the board of directors for a Ukrainian energy company. Mm-hmm. And his dad is the vice president of the United States. I'm sorry, that invites questions in my mind. And so I think the president of the United States was perfectly right, given that we have a treaty with the Ukrainians on corruption, to ask them, hey, what the hell is going on? Right? Like, just look into that for us. You know, I think it's a legitimate question as to what Joe Biden's son was doing in Ukraine, why he was so well compensated, and what the Ukrainian oil company or natural gas company was getting in return for paying a crackhead $600,000. I mean, it looks like there was a quid pro quo where Joe Biden, you know, they were buying access to Joe Biden as vice president. Now, it could be the case that Joe Biden himself did nothing wrong, right? We don't know that. Mm-hmm. I think it's worthy of further investigation. So in my mind, the impeachment I always thought was so dumb because I thought Trump was perfectly justified. I read the transcript of the call to ask what the hell was going on. And, you know, here's what I find rich, right? George W. Bush launches the Iraq War. It's a total disaster. It kills over 500,000 Iraqis. He doesn't get impeached, right? You know, the administration kind of – I don't want to say that they fabricated evidence, but they definitely – let's say manipulated evidence in favor of a war for weapons of mass destruction. He doesn't get impeached. Barack Obama gets elected, does all these, you know, executive branch power grabs and blows up Libya and turns Libya into an open air slave market. He doesn't get impeached. Trump, you know, rebels against the national security state by like holding off on aid for like 3 days to some foreign country where I don't know why it's in the United States' interest to protect the borders of the Ukraine when at least 90% of the American population has no idea of where Ukraine even is. And yet that's what gets a president impeached. I think it's just sad and it's really – it's just stupid. It's stupid, Michael, but maybe I'm low IQ. I know I'm a Republican. I'm a troglodyte and I'm not supposed to get these things, but I don't understand it.
Well, my thought is first, let's go back to Hunter Biden. What qualifications did this guy have to get on a board of a Ukrainian oil company? That to me is question number one that our corrupt media in this country that's clearly in the tank for the left should be asking. I mean, that's a valid question that should be asked. How did this guy,
right,
who has no credentials whatsoever, end up serving on the board of a Ukrainian oil company and getting paid whatever it was? I thought actually it was closer to $1 million.
I don't remember the exact. It was at least $600,000 to $1 million. You know, I used to sit in Barclays Commodities Research. I'm not trying to brag, but I have more experience with the energy markets than Joe Biden's crackhead son, right? So it doesn't make any sense to me. It doesn't make any sense. And look, you're an accountant. I'm a banker. Companies don't just hire people because they're nice, right? They don't give out, you know, $600,000 jobs because it's like, oh, hey, you're a nice guy. Come work for me.
Mm-hmm.
Something in return. They're profit. You know, they're looking for profit. So they were clearly trying to get access to his father. Now, whether or not Joe Biden did anything, we don't know. We honestly don't know. But I think it's worthy of investigation to figure out what the hell they were doing. I think it was fully within the president's powers. I think this is what it comes down to, if we're being honest. I think Nancy Pelosi is a smart woman. I think she knew this was going nowhere. I don't think she ever wanted to impeach the president. But she had a base that was so riled up after the Mueller report, which went nowhere, absolutely nowhere, right? And they were screaming.
You called that one too,
yeah,
by the way.
They were screaming for impeachment after that. It went nowhere. And by the way, they said, well, there was obstruction of justice, that his report said obstruction of justice. But they really thought that they should have threw that in the impeachment indictment, like one of the articles of the impeachment. Mueller was never mentioned again. It's completely dead. So they ginned up the base. They edged the base. And then they finally found the stupidest thing. They said, aha, this is it. And they just went charging after it. And here we are.
Yeah, because I mean, if we look back when we started this podcast, which was I think this past summer, that was all the talk, Mueller, Mueller, Mueller. And then those hearings were a complete train wreck, especially when Robert Mueller went up there and just didn't even know what was in his own report. We knew at that point they weren't going to get him for that. And then this story kind of just came out of the blue. And then this is what they're trying to get.
Right.
They were going to try to impeach him. It just didn't make sense. And I agree. I mean, Nancy Pelosi, I don't think she's not an idiot. She didn't get to become Speaker of the House by not being a very wise politician. She knows what she's doing. But in this case, I think she made a big mistake by caving to the far left of her party that, unfortunately for her, I think she may not have even had a choice in this situation, because they were going to continue to push this and push it and push it until something was done. But I think she knew the repercussions, which I think we're going to start seeing, and we've already started seeing in some polls, would hit, and the blowback starting to hit. And I think this could cost them dearly in 2020.
Yeah, listen, I think that forget whether or not he's guilty, okay? Forget whether or not Dane's a Republican shill. Let's ask another question. Is it good politics, right? And I think the answer is clearly it's not good politics. I mean, the polls, I've looked at multiple polls, Quinnipiac, Fox News, who's actually pretty neutral in their polling, Gallup, and there were Emerson, and there were a couple others. So I've seen at least five polls, and in every single one of them, he is improving his position. And the people that support impeachment, it's now a majority against it. Or the support for impeachment has gone down, right?
Yeah.
It's a convoluted, it's incoherent. Nobody's really sure what he did, and it makes no sense. And again, the base was so worked up, they had to give him something. They gave him this, and I really think it's turning off a lot of people. I really do. I think the average American probably cannot stand Donald Trump, but that average American probably doesn't like the Democrats either. And after this, they're probably just as pissed with the Democrats as they are Trump, because they see it as theater and stupid antics, right? They should have impeached him on the Mueller stuff, but there was nothing there. That stuff was kind of understandable. This is just – it's bizarre.
Yeah. So you were talking about the polls. I have up the Real Clear Politics average for support for impeachment and removal versus oppose. So back in, let's see, October 21st, it was about a 5-point spread where about 49.5% of the country favored impeachment and removal, 44.5% opposed. Those numbers have flip-flopped. And just within this past week, it flipped the other way. We're now 48% of the population. And this is about – actually, I'm looking here. This is probably about 10, 12 polls all out within the last week. And the average shows about 48% are opposed to impeachment and removal, and 47% are in favor. So these numbers have – I mean, that's a net 6-point swing right there in about a 2-month period. And you would have thought after those hearings, if anything, if they would have done the job they wanted to do, that gap would have grown bigger, but it went the other way.
It
definitely on the surface looks like it backfired. And then even there have been some state polls out and some national polls. I don't really like to read too much in the national polls because they really don't mean much. But again, I like to look at how polls evolve, and even some of the national polls have narrowed quite a bit. Even with Joe Biden, there's I think Emerson or one of them had even nationally Trump beating all of the Democratic candidates on a national level, which is probably the first I've seen in quite some time. So this I think is just a major miscalculation by Nancy Pelosi, but I don't know if she's 100% at fault. She's at fault for getting it to this point, allowing this impeachment, the proceedings to proceed, but I think in the long run she's going to regret this one.
Well, you know, I think that there was another thing going on in the background. The economy has been getting better. Like over the summer, we had recession hysteria, and then there was a jobs report that came out in November that was very good. Wages are continuing to go up, and the risk of recession has kind of declined. So the impeachment was flat, and the economy, that risk of recession has dropped and looks solid heading into next year. And again, it's unpredictable. Nobody really knows. But I think both of those have worked to shore up his support. And as you said, he's doing pretty well in the swing states. Like if you look at Wisconsin, Michigan, Ohio, North Carolina, Florida. I've seen polls coming out of all these states, and he's doing well. He's in the lead, and you know he's beating Biden. He's destroying Buttigieg and Warren. He's, you know, it's actually Bernie Sanders and Joe Biden are two of their stronger candidates relative on these swing state polls. So I think impeachment's been a total disaster. Look, here's the thing. Trump can be beaten. He can totally be beaten. All the Democrats have to do is protect the status quo in health care, go on a strong anti-monopoly, anti-big business agenda, and talk about workers' rights and unions and stuff like that. And they'd be able to have a good majority, and they'd be able to take back the presidency. I'd say, you know, center left to you know, a little bit more left on economics and kind of moderate on social issues. Take some of that populist anger, channel it against Wall Street and big business. They win, and they would destroy him, but they keep screwing it up. And this impeachment has dug them such a deep hole. If you look at impeachment, you consider it success. You should never analyze politics again. It's like, you know, you know what I mean? It's like, I don't know how else to say it. It's such a military blunder on their part that anybody who thinks that this was a good move should be automatically disqualified.
I agree. Two things I wanted to mention. So first, if you look at a lot of these polls, especially Donald Trump and his approval rating, it's in what, probably the low to mid 40s. I think the last I saw was like around 44% in a Real Clear Politics average. And the same goes in a lot of states and even some of the swing states. He's in the mid, maybe upper 40s. But when you look at the head-to-head, he seems to be getting about 4 maybe to 6 points more than his approval rating in a number of these polls in a number of these states and maybe even nationwide. So that tells me that there's that gap of the electorate that doesn't like him personally, but will look past his personal shortcomings, his personality, which is to me the number one issue with President Trump, and vote based on the fact that, well, first off, the candidates on the other side have lost their minds with some of their proposals, Medicare for all, and among other things. That's the first point. The second point is when you look at your 401k, when you look at the stock market where it's at, when you look at the economy, the unemployment rate, you look at the fact we haven't had like a terrorist attack. He's attempting to get us out of maybe some of these endless wars in the Middle East. It's hard to really objectively state the country's not in good hands right now and in a good situation. I mean, based on all those measures, we're doing really, really well. And I think Donald Trump, and we've talked about this before, his personality is an issue. But I think based on that gap we're seeing, I think there's a good 4 to 6% of the electorate that is willing to look past that. They might not approve of him personally or view him favorably, but they're willing to vote for him when it comes to 2020. So that's something we'll have to watch closely moving into next year. Another point is I was watching NBC yesterday evening with the impeachment hearings, and Chuck Todd, somebody who I quite frankly do not care for whatsoever, you know, he's filling the shoes of Tim Russert, who I had a lot of respect for. I remember my dad used to watch him almost every Sunday morning on Meet the Press. Chuck Todd is a left-wing hack as far as I'm concerned. But he was talking about
– Sleepy Eyes, Chuck.
Yes, yeah, Sleepy Eyes, Chuck Todd. And he was talking about the country right now. And he said the third American president is being impeached. He expected, you know, 70 million, 80 million people to be watching these – impeachment hearings, this vote to take place. It's the third American president in our history to be impeached. And he said it's essentially just another day in politics. But the fact of the matter is, Chuck, if you got out of the blue bubble that you're in Washington, D.C., in New York City, you would realize that people in the middle of the country don't give a crap about these impeachment hearings, because before this president even was inaugurated, people on your side were talking about impeaching him. As far as I'm concerned, the charade that has taken place over the last month has just diminished the, I guess you could call it maybe the value or the importance of impeachment. And it's just been a blindly partisan exercise that has taken place. I mean, impeachment is an extremely serious thing. And to do one so politically, I mean, you're setting a slippery precedent for the future. I mean, you hear some of these politicians talk. These Democratic politicians talk, well, if we win the Senate, we could still try him again in 2021 once we take control, and maybe we could get him there. Well, fact of the matter is, you're still not going to get 67 senators to remove him from office. But the idea is they still want to get this guy out of office. And part of me does think they realize he's going to be tough to beat. As much as many issues as he has, and as turbulent as his presidency has been, unless this economy crashes, he's going to be extremely difficult to beat. And I'm sure you've seen a lot of like the Wall Street measurements that predict elections, and a lot of the Wall Street analysts overwhelmingly now are saying that they fully expect Trump to win, just based on the sure economic numbers that we're seeing in this country right now.
You know, so I want to make a point. I think that, you know, in politics, a lot of it is call it your gut or call it the momentum. It's a feeling, right? You know, there are polls and everything like that. But then sometimes you get a feeling that certain things are going to happen. Like, you know, in 2016 with Trump, Shanley crucially thought that Trump was going to win. And she just thought he was going to be the guy, right? And the polls maybe didn't suggest it at all points in time. But you kind of get like a sense of things, right? And sometimes you're wrong, sometimes you're right. I think over the last few weeks, there's been a – call it a feeling or gut – call it a gut feeling that Trump is going to win re-election. And I think the country kind of went from no way is this guy going to win re-election to – yeah, he's probably going to win re-election. Not he's absolutely going to win re-election, but yeah, probably he's going to win. And I think that there's just been a shift in attitude in the country. And I, you know, this is kind of crazy. I'm not trying to get, you know, hocus pocus over here, but I really do think that like people were intrigued by impeachment. You know, they thought the worst, and they tuned in. They got bored out of their minds. Said, "Yeah, this isn't going anywhere." Gave it up. And now they're like, yep, he's probably going to win. And the economy is still doing pretty well. GG, Democrats. Good game. It's over.
I agree. I do think they're in trouble. Obviously, we're a full 11 months out. That's an eternity in politics. Anything could happen. Like I said, if the economy were to tank, which – quite frankly, I just don't see that happening. I don't think any of the indicators are really showing that. But just think from this time last December when the markets were struggling, and then over this past summer, like you alluded to, with a lot of talk of recession, and much of that has gone away, and the market just continues to churn along. The unemployment number still is strong. The jobs numbers have been great. GDP's been fairly well. So unless something drastically changes, I think he's going to be very, very difficult to beat now in 2020, especially as a result of what's happening right now with his impeachment.
Yeah. I think, I think it's pretty clear to my mind now that he's the odds on favorite. I think it's like a 55%. And I think that the Democrats majorly messed up with impeachment.
I agree. Another thing I wanted to talk about was this Democratic field. And it seems to me – now, anything can happen. And oftentimes after the first few states, the caucuses and the early primaries, some of these people will end up dropping out and consolidate around other people. But it seems to me like we're seeing that this top four – you could conceivably have four different winners in the first six, eight states. And maybe, just maybe, none of them end up getting to whatever the magic number is in terms of delegates. I honestly, you know, last podcast we were saying it was Elizabeth Warren was a front runner because it certainly seemed that way. And then she's fizzled out just like some of these other ones have fizzled out. Kamala Harris is another example. Biden still seems to be towards the top or at the top, but I mean – he hasn't been able to necessarily grow his base either. He's just been kind of holding steady the whole time. So what are your thoughts on where the Democrats currently stand with their candidates?
Well, I urge people not to read too much into where the polls are today. And what I mean by that is if you're Elizabeth Warren and you're going to collapse, I think now would be the perfect time to collapse because you want to kind of have another rally into the election. You want your weakest point to be over the Thanksgiving and Christmas season when nobody's really paying attention, right? So But that said, I do think that there's – I think there's two parallel campaigns, right? One is I think black voters who pundits tend to ignore, I think, you know. And I think that college-educated white journalists that drive many of the Democratic intelligentsia, they tend to ignore this whole segment of the Democratic voting base. Black voters have been very loyal to Joe Biden. And I think loyal enough to put him over the top, and he's continued to lead. Like, you don't see online the amount of Joe Biden hype anywhere near what's, you know, the reality on the ground, right? He's got 30 to 35% of support. He's got a solid one third. Yet if you were to look at, you know, social media, Reddit, Twitter, you wouldn't support her. So that's the first point. And then the second is, the second track in this primary, they seem to be continually trying to like sniff out different candidates. At one point it was Kamala, then it was Warren, then it was recently it's Buttigieg. But they haven't really, if I'm a Democrat and I'm being honest, I don't think they found their person yet. I really, really don't. They're just continuing to rotate through. I think it just might be, you know, Biden and someone else. At the end of the day, I don't know. I don't know if that made sense.
No, I think it makes sense. Do you think there is some potential for maybe a contested convention, or do you think, like historically we've seen in the past, you see these other candidates consolidate and end up getting somebody to the finish line?
No, I think they're going to start consolidating and somebody's going to go to the finish line. I do think that there's going to be a lot of disappointment with whoever does get to the finish line. But I think they consolidate and get to the finish line. I think if I had to guess, I think all the tier three people and tier two people drop out. Bloomberg, because of his money, continues to stay in. But, you know, Klobuchar, Tulsi Gabbard, Marianne Williamson, Yang, all these people start to drop out. And I think it becomes a Biden, Sanders, Warren, Buttigieg race with Bloomberg still in there because of his money.
Mm-hmm.
And I still think Biden takes it. Did I say or Biden or Warren? Biden or Warren?
Yeah, I mean,
Warren's really strong, but I think one of those two.
Yeah, it seems to me that maybe part of Biden's ability to get a third of the vote is maybe there are still some old school Democrats out there that recognize that their party is going pretty far out there. A lot of people our age seem to not like Joe Biden, from at least, and this is just anecdotal evidence, but just from what I see on Facebook, on Twitter, on Reddit, they don't want Joe Biden as their nominee.
No, they don't. They don't. The young people do not want Joe. Well, he's like 95 years old. I mean, his mind's turning to mush. I'm not trying to be rude to the man. I feel bad for him. I just don't think he should be president.
Yeah. I mean, we've talked about that in multiple episodes about his brain or his mind just doesn't seem to be quite as sharp as it once was.
Yeah. And we made the point, and this is, I think, either you or I made the point that a lot of people in the initial polls were thinking of 2012 Joe Biden versus Trump.
Mm-hmm.
And as the public has become more exposed to Joe Biden and seen, you know, 2019 Biden, right? Biden, who he is today, his polling number has dropped considerably. And he once looked like a titan against Trump. He'd win it by 10 to 15 points. And now he's behind.
like Joe Biden said, he'll beat him like a drum. I want to. That's a good point you mentioned, though, is a lot of the voters, or at least the ones responding to polls, may be envisioning Joe Biden of the past. But if he is their nominee and he goes on the debate stage against Trump and he has one of his instances where his mind seems to be slipping a little bit and he starts stuttering and not really making a coherent statement, I think that could be extremely detrimental to him.
Right.
Especially because, I mean, those are both older gentlemen, right? I mean, they're both into what's Trump, mid-70s, or he will be in his mid-70s?
He's 73.
So they're both in their 70s. And if Donald Trump looks that much younger and sharper, I think it could really hurt him because – hurt Biden, that is. Because, again, a lot of the people out there who seemed to think that he would win big. Using this idea that he's the Joe Biden of the past, but when an average person who doesn't really follow politics watch that debate and they see him struggling, I think it could really, really hurt him and be like, oof, this is not the guy. This is not a man I could support, at 78 years old to be the next president. Because, I mean, it's such a critical job. I mean, Donald Trump seems to be tweeting in the middle of the night. I don't know when he ever sleeps. You got to be sharp in that position at all times. And unfortunately for Joe, I just think his mind's slipping quite a bit.
Yeah, so here's the deal. Here's the deal, right? Trump has a bit of his craziness already baked in. So Trump could go on a rant and people will say that's just Trump. They won't necessarily say that's because of his age. But Biden is slipping in a different way than Trump is. Trump has this kooky way of speaking. It's kind of rambling, but there's a coherency to it. It's very weird. But if you watch his interviews from like the 90s, right, he speaks in the same way, right? It's not necessarily age-related. And it's weird. I'm not trying to defend. I'm just saying like it's kind of built into the pie. But Biden, I think people still, even though this has changed, I think people still think of him as the young guy in 2012. If he were to start stuttering on stage or just to pause, it turns off support. And maybe those people don't vote for Trump, but they don't necessarily vote for Biden. They sit it out. And it's game over. So I don't think Biden could beat Donald Trump. I, at this point, I really don't.
Mm-hmm. And there was a time I was concerned with him being their nominee. I'm like, oh, these polls don't look good. But the more we watch this race evolve much more closely, I want him as their nominee. I want him on that debate stage. And I especially want him because for so long we've heard that he has been their supposed front runner. I want to beat their supposed number one in 2020. That way, hopefully, it lends to the credibility of this President Trump and his history as a president and his reelection campaign. I think it would go a long way if he goes out there and actually beats what many have stated is the Democrats' top choice or the top candidate to beat Trump. So that's who I want now. More and more, I want Biden on that ticket.
Yeah, I do too. Well, I also want Buttigieg on the ticket because I think Buttigieg is a horrible human being and entirely soulless, and he's also polling very weakly. So I wouldn't mind if he was on there, but I really think anybody they put up there. I actually think that their strongest candidate is Bernie Sanders, and because I can see Bernie Sanders winning back the Rust Belt, and he's old, but he's mentally sharp. His big problem is he recently had a heart attack, which is concerning. And you know, I'm not trying to wish ill on him. I hope he does well. But Bernie Sanders, I think, ironically, might be their stronger candidate or their strongest candidate. Mm-hmm. The rest of them, I just really don't see them sealing the deal. It's kind of ironic. I mean, Tulsi Gabbard could win, but they hate Tulsi Gabbard she's not an imperialist.
After her present votes yesterday, I don't see that happening.
Yeah, that's done.
I think she did that to make a point. You mentioned Mayor Pete. Let's talk about that.
Love to talk about Mayor Pete.
His major issue to me has been his inability to pick up virtually any black support. I want to hear your thoughts. Why?
Okay, you want me to go first, or you go first?
Hear your thoughts, and I'll chime in throughout.
I think it's two reasons. One is Mayor Pete is a creature of the upper middle class intelligentsia, or the upper middle class professional class. Right? He worked at McKinsey. He went to top notch schools, and that entire socioeconomic class. You know, they profess that they believe in racial equality and all these things, but they're not very good at hiding like a thinly veiled contempt for black Americans, right? I mean, it's true, right? They're the most progressive and woke on race issues, but I think that they get along the least well between, you know, black America and the yuppie who is gentrifying the neighborhood and, you know, driving black families out of somewhere they've lived for 100 years, but meanwhile is, you know, talking about the importance of reparations. That's like Mayor Pete in a nutshell. So there's that. I think there's a class animosity there and hatred. There's the second thing is he's done not a good job as mayor of South Bend when terms police killing black people. I know there were some issues there. I haven't looked deep enough into it, so I might be speaking out of turn here. But yeah, that doesn't work well. And also, you know, finally, this is a little too hardcore for people. But you know, Black America has its problems with gay people. If you look at the polling, there's still a antipathy to homosexuality in Black America. I don't know if it's a majority opinion, but it's certainly a pluralistic opinion. It exists, right? And we can't ignore it. And Mayor Pete, as a bourgeois gay man, is probably Black America's least favorite pick for president. So those are the three reasons, I would say.
Well, where I was going was your last two points, I think. And that's what's going to really hurt him in the long run if he stays in this. I think number one, you said it best, and I even have a 538.com article, which again, 538 is a pretty left leaning website, and even in here, they think that it's plausible that Mayor Pete, who is an openly gay candidate, starts at a disadvantage among black voters because black Democrats overall as a group are not nearly as supportive of gay marriage or gay relationships as a white or a Hispanic Democrat is. So I the more I think about that, it does resonate. I even remember back in the debates over the gay marriage when it first came out, there was some ballot measures before the Supreme Court ruled on it. And there, I recall even articles where black Americans weren't necessarily in favor of gay marriage. I'm not sure – I don't know enough information as to why that is. But it seems to be the case, and I think it resonated, and they cited here in one of the polls in South Carolina where he registered virtually zero Democratic support in South Carolina in a poll, and they seem to maybe be thinking that it could be along those lines. And then the second point is you didn't mention that issue with an incident in South Bend, Indiana. I think that doesn't help his case either, but if he wants to be the Democrat nominee – he needs to have the black vote. We saw what happened in 2016 when the black vote didn't turn out in cities like Detroit and in Cleveland. The Democrats lost states they needed to win. I mean, they weren't probably going to win Ohio, but turnout was down.
It would have been tighter.
It would have certainly been tighter, especially in Cuyahoga County. They weren't getting their voters out. And if he's the nominee and that were to happen again – I don't see a plausible path for them to win in 2020 because they have to pick off two of those three, Wisconsin, Michigan, or Pennsylvania. It's going to be tough. There's a number of African Americans, especially in Michigan and Pennsylvania. I don't see how you possibly win without that huge coalition of voters. And another thing is Donald Trump's approval or support among Democrats, at least among black America, has trickled up a little bit. And it's plausible to me that he could maybe pick off maybe 3 to 5% of the black vote compared to 4 years ago. And if he does that, it makes it even more difficult. Just because overall his policies in many ways have benefited black America, among other – pretty much all of America, but – unemployment rate for African Americans, I believe, is at all-time lows, just with job numbers and all those other things and changes in the tax law. It has benefited black America. So I think it's conceivable that you could have some additional support for Trump in 2020 among black voters. And if that's the case as well, it makes it very difficult for the Democrats to win because they rely on that coalition that I think – Barack Obama won what like 95% of the vote when he
More
was running, something like that. So a huge number. I mean, for so many years, they just rely on that vote. They don't have to do too much. They come out and vote. But if they lose that percentage, just a few points, or if they don't get their vote, the black vote out, it spells major trouble for them.
It does. I mean, if you look at the last two presidents, Barack Obama had a huge support from the black community, and it's clear why, right? It goes without saying. But Bill Clinton, the other Democratic president elected, was extremely popular with the black community. In fact, he was viewed as America's first black president. Some of you younger listeners might not remember this, but you know, Clinton was termed America's first black president because he had such strong support within the black community. He grew up in the South. He grew up in a single mother household, and he connected really well with them. You know, he wasn't your stiff WASP, right? He was a down to earth type guy. And this is the thing: the Republican Party, they've been really stupid in saying like, oh, we'll just we'll create all these groups dedicated to going to black America and teaching them the virtues of conservatism and why like free trade is really good for them. And you know, Donald Trump said, you know, don't cater to them as black Americans, cater to them as Americans, working class Americans. Right. And as the GOP adopts a more pro worker agenda incrementally, they're going to get more black and also ironically more Latino Americans. Like tariffs. Who do tariffs help? Well, tariffs help those that are working in manufacturing industries most exposed to Chinese competition or foreign competition. And those are disproportionately black and Hispanic Americans. Who does curbing illegal immigration and even legal immigration, who does that help? That actually helps blacks and Latinos, U.S. citizen Latinos, the most. Why? Because they face the strongest competition from illegal immigration. I mean, it's an unfortunate reality, but like yuppie lawyers, right, aren't facing wage pressure from illegal immigration. It's people without high school degrees, with some college. And those people, unfortunately, I mean, I'm just saying based on statistics, are predominantly or more likely to be black and Latino. So if you help those groups by curbing competition in the labor market, right, they do better and their wages go up, like you said, and they're going to vote for you. That's how you win. You don't say like, hey, you know, the Constitution is great and blah, blah, blah. You should be a conservative and read Russell Kirk and, you know, and it's cool. And no. You say, look, we're going to help you and deliver for you and deliver for your communities. And yeah, you get 4 or 5 or 6% more of those communities. Boom, you win. That's just like Donald Trump did better with the Latino vote than Mitt Romney did.
Mm-hmm.
And
who saw that coming?
Right. Who saw that coming? But it makes sense because Donald Trump did better with the working class than Mitt Romney did. That's the way Republicans appeal to minorities. That's the way they got to win.
I agree. So one last point or
yeah,
one last topic that we had for tonight was Tim Ryan.
Oh, now, our favorite.
This yes, is, I think, our favorite. Our official we love favorite talking topic. About Tim Ryan. We talked about it. Oh, I know. It's a super soft shirt, right?
Yeah, like him.
It's a collector's item now, unfortunately, for his supporters. But he now has – I think now there's 7 Republicans running – for the Republican seat or what's the word I'm looking for?
The Republican primary?
Yeah, the spot to go against Tim Ryan in 2020.
Really?
Yeah. So there's actually a debate, I think 2 or 3 weeks ago at the Republican headquarters in Boardman for Mahoning County. And it was the first 4 that had declared there's a Marine, I think a couple business owners and somebody else. Those were local ones running. And then I read today or yesterday on the Vindicator's website, there was also a couple people from near Akron and maybe in Portage County as well that are running. And but the last but not least, and perhaps the most important of them all, who's now running, her name's Christina Hagan. She is a Republican. I'm trying to see how old she is. She is not – she can't be much older than probably she's probably in her mid-30s, I would guess. She's a former Ohio State representative. She was that from 2011 to 2018. And then in 2018, she ran for Congress. So she was in the 16th district. She ran against Anthony Gonzalez, a former Ohio State football player in the Republican primary. She lost 53% to 41%. And then Anthony Gonzalez ended up winning that seat, 57 to 43. So she has name recognition. She definitely has I'm sure she has a number of people who have contributed to her in the past. We talked about this last episode. We've talked about Trump all night. For Tim Ryan to really have a legitimate shot of possibly losing his seat, we talked about the need for a credible candidate. To me, she is very credible. She's won elections in the past. She has name recognition, at least in the western half of this district. Now, it's interesting. She must have moved because she lives now in Alliance, and she previously ran in the 16th, and now she's running in the 13th. So at some point in time over the last couple of years, it sounds like she's moved. But I was excited to see that she is running, and she also has the support of Mary Taylor, former lieutenant governor, who was also thinking about running for this seat. So Tim Ryan now might have
– Wait, pause for a second, Michael, not to interrupt
you. I'm pausing.
I heard that former lieutenant governor Mary Taylor was considering running. If I understand you correctly, she is not running.
Correct. The deadline was a couple days ago, and in the article on Cleveland.com, it said that she opted against running, and she's supporting Christina Hagan, as well as I think the Republican chairs for Mahoning, Trumbull, and Portage counties as well have already come out in support of her as well. So I think what's going to be interesting to see happen is whether or not Republicans, the congressional, whatever that arm of the fundraising arm, will pump money in here or any political action committees. But to me, this might be one worth exploring, especially with the way the demographics of this district have changed and how well Donald Trump did in this district in 2016.
I am surprised that Mary Taylor went with Christina Hagan. I find that – I thought Mary Taylor was going to run. The problem with Christina Hagan is I think that she is pretty right-wing.
She is. I will say that.
So I don't know how well that plays in an area that is trending to the right, but I don't think it's full-on to the right. So I don't know how well she'd do. I think she'll probably outperform the other candidates. I don't know if she'll be able to close it. I think more likely what's going to happen. I think I explored this theory with you. Is I think that Ohio's going to lose a congressional seat, and I think Tim Ryan loses his seat. And potentially, what she's doing is running not necessarily to beat Tim Ryan, but to get her name out there. So if it gets redistricted into a Republican-leaning area, she can beat the Republican in the primary and potentially take the seat, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So, you know, on the upside, she wins in 2020 and takes the district. But on the, you know, the downside, she loses, but she gets her name out there and gets well set up for 2022. And then maybe primaries at David Joyce or something like that and you know, beats him and wins and then beats Tim Ryan. David Joyce, I only mention him. Not to be targeting him, but just because he's the Republican in our area, his district could be expanded to include the Tim Ryan area or Bill Johnson or something like that.
Mm-hmm. And I'm looking at doing a little research as you were talking. She actually is right around her age. She was born in 1988. So she's 31 years old now. So she's,
wow.
She's very young. I think she was appointed initially to her first seat, and then she was able to run successfully three terms because she definitely served seven terms here. She is definitely far out there on the right, and she's very pro-life. She was a big advocate for the heartbeat bill in the state of Ohio. So she's definitely far right, at least on that issue. I don't necessarily know where her stances are on all things domestically, on economic policy. I'll be interested in hearing more about that. But I guess the thing we're going to have to watch closely here is whether or not the big national or maybe regional arms that pump monies into certain races, if they do look at this one closely. Because like we said, this district's trending more right. Is it enough to close a gap where it's still – Tim Ryan got what? I still think he got 60% or
I think he got like 61.
61%. So that's a tough gap to close in just a 2-year period. But then again, you also got to look back at who has Tim Ryan ran against over his course of his 18 or whatever years in Congress. This to me is definitely his, maybe outside of his first election, probably his most will be most challenging for him. I'm not sure necessarily. Another thing is the population of this county, how it flows from west to east. If it's still more heavily Mahoning Valley compared to that Akron side, she's over in Alliance, so she's in that area where it's kind of a little bit of Mahoning, Stark, Portage to the north. She might do better out that way. And I think maybe that might be another issue.
Yeah,
that could be an issue for her is will people in the Mahoning Valley be willing to support somebody who is, you know, 45 minutes away and not from our community? Because you know how the logic is here. You know, people are sometimes not willing to change or budge or think outside the box.
Well, I know there's a big divide between the Akron and the Youngstown. I think it's either Akron feels like they don't get any love for from Tim or Youngstown, and Warren feels like they don't get any love from Tim, or one of the cities I know feels neglected.
I would probably think it'd have to be Akron, being that Tim Ryan's, I mean, he's from the Mahoning Valley, and it seems like a lot of what he does, and I read a lot of this, the monies he brings in, a lot of it is concentrated in our market, and he's not from Akron, so I would think that they might feel a little left out. And I'm looking at this map right now. This is one funky congressional map for the 13th.
It's very funky.
It goes, it bounces all over. I mean, the Alliance part literally is just this little random part that heads to the south that they drew in. And then the part around Akron is just one of the most bizarre things. You can just tell there's little streets all over the place where they cuts off from district to district. Yeah, real funky looking district. So she's kind of smack dab in the middle between Akron and Youngstown. So will she be able to bridge that gap between the two communities? We'll see. But I'm at least encouraged that somebody who's won three elections is now running against Tim Ryan.
I would be surprised if Tim Ryan were still in Congress 10 years from now. I even put it maybe 5 years.
I would say less. Yeah.
So I think I think that you make a good point. Here's the point behind this conversation. We don't know if Tim Ryan's going to lose this upcoming race. He maybe wins, maybe he doesn't. But his time is limited, right? The clock is ticking, and he's going to be done soon.
I have one more point on Tim Ryan. I listen to 570 quite frequently throughout the week. Tim Ryan has refused for years to go on Dan Rivers' show in the morning from, I think it's from like 9 to 12, or Ron Verb's show from 3 to 6 weekdays. I'm listening yesterday. Ron Verb's taking most of this week off. I think Joe Danier, he owns a local business, Youngstown Computer. He's had some interesting guests on. So he's had he just had the CEO of Youngstown Business Incubator on. And while she was on, lo and behold, guess who calls into 570? Tim Ryan. This has happened yesterday. I think it's very cowardly of him, where he shies away from an opportunity to at least speak with an opposing point of view, speak with his constituents that he represents locally that, again, may disagree with him. So he refuses to go on when somebody who disagrees with him hosts the show. But he's willing to go on when some people maybe he's friends with, or he has acquaintances with, are hosting. It just frustrates me. And this is what we're dealing with here.
I actually heard about that from my father-in-law. He mentioned that today, that Tim Ryan was on there for the Joe Danier show. And Joe Danier is not a really political guy.
No.
Right? I thought he was more of a computer guy.
So Barb Ewing, she's the CEO of the Incubator. A lot of the funding I believe they've received historically has – not a lot or some, or a portion of their funding has come through Tim Ryan's office. So I think she has a good relationship with Tim Ryan. And they were talking about some different things going on with 3D printing and all that stuff. And so they wanted to have him on to talk about those things. But my point hasn't changed. Like, he could go on that – on these programs, at least talk with the voters who disagree with them. I mean, you've won 18 elections. You've been in Congress for 18 years now. I mean, you shouldn't shy away from talking to your own voters, like it seems like he's doing. But So I just listened. And I was quite frustrated by that.
Yeah, totally. That's disappointing.
Yeah, it really is. You know, I listen to Dan Rivers enough. He's very reasonable. He supports Trump, but he's very reasonable. He has a number of guests on that oppose him. Ron Verb, I mean, he's evolved immensely politically from being a two-time Barack Obama voter to being one of the most ardent Trump supporters there are. He'd be willing to give him a fair shake as well and ask him, but he would still ask him tough, pointed questions and demand answers because, quite frankly, he doesn't think Tim Ryan's doing an inadequate job in Washington. It just seems like so much of what Tim does is geared more towards the national Democratic I don't know what word I'm looking for – situation compared to what's going on in our own district. And it's just too frustrating to me. This just doesn't seem like his priorities are – in our district anymore.
Well,
that's just my own personal opinion.
Yeah. Well, I think we need you to run. You should run in the district. Take it over.
Well. That's maybe his district will just be wiped off the map here in a few years.
You can still run whatever the new district is.
I don't know. Christina Hagan might have something to say.
Listen,
about that.
Unless you're trying to marry Christina Hagan, you know, you gotta. You're going to have to run eventually, right? You gotta take power, Michael. You know, the Mets in your clan, you're numerous, but you don't have a title yet. You need a title. All great families, if they must rule, they must rule with a title so that they can have a legacy and a heritage. You don't have that yet.
Yeah, we don't.
The representative of Northeast Ohio would finally give the Mets in your clan the dignity and the stature that it rightfully deserves.
So I think one major issue for me would be my last name's kind of long. I don't know how that would ever fit on a political sign. It wouldn't be big enough, big and bold enough to really catch on.
No,
and I think another thing
is
people
wrong.
Would be butchering my last name.
You just say,
I get
first
Metzinger
of all,
quite a bit.
Metzinger is not a hard name, but you just vote Mets.
Vote Mets. I like
vote Mets. Come on. That's an excuse. It's an excuse. Listen. Christina Hagan's going to run. She's going to do it. Yeah, you're paying your loyalty to the current GOP crop. But I know within 4 years, you're going to, you know, 4 to 6 years, you got the nice, young, all-American family. You're just going to run and take it over. Millennial rising, right?
Yeah, I don't know. Another thing, now that I think of it, because you mentioned her name a few times, I wonder how many people locally might think that she's related to Bob Hagan.
Oh, that's a good question. Yeah, Bob Hagan.
So maybe she could fool people into not within 10, but maybe fool people with her last name to think, oh, she's a Hagan. I'm going to vote for her.
Yeah, Bob.
Maybe.
Bob,
maybe there's some.
Bob Hagan, he's a interesting guy. I saw him at the Tim Ryan rally. It looked like he was seven sheets to the wind, and he was dancing around sloppily. And I was just glad he didn't pick a fight with a black person like he likes to do. But the lemon grows low, so I guess he can't hit on young teenagers anymore and pick fight with black people. But
I forgot all about the lemon.
Oh,
grove.
Yeah.
The owner, that Harvard, I do know, owns that it's like a bicycle that he transports people around downtown on. I don't know if you've seen it, if you've ever been down that way, but over the summertime, he'll like drive around. It's like I forget, it's like some sort of cab they call it.
Yeah.
And he owns it, and he'll like drive people around downtown on it, like from point to point.
He's not very high IQ. And look, I'm not, you might say, well, that's an insult. I think that's just stating the obvious. I once got into an argument with Jacob Harbor in the Starbucks in Austintown. I was talking politics with my friends, and he jumped in. And he argued that natural gas companies burn natural gas to keep the prices high. And he was saying that, you know, they're burning all this gas that they're mining, drilling for, and they do that to keep prices high so they can make more money. And anybody who really believes that is low IQ, is stupid. I don't know how else to put that. I'm trying to be polite. Maybe I shouldn't use the word stupid. Maybe I should just say anybody who believes that's a moron, right? And it's moronic because, one, when you drill for gas and you drill for oil, there's some that's emitted, that's burned. That naturally happens. It's part of the drilling process. They don't do that to push up prices. But two, if they were doing that to push up prices, they'd be losing revenue. So any incremental gains in the price from burning supply would be offset by destroying the supply and the lack of selling it, right? I mean, it's like a shock that the Lemon Grove went out of business. And it's like, well, hey, maybe the guy should learn some basic economics. And I don't know. But that's good. He's really diversifying his business portfolio into, giving bicycle rides to drunks throughout Youngstown who are on their fourth DUI and can't have a license anymore. That's progressive. Sorry.
There is very progressive.
Sorry,
we always got to slip that word in. That's a hip word to use.
Progressive. You got to be progressive.
I'm progressive,
right? We got to be progressive.
I still like to use the term liberal.
Liberal. I think progressive's the new trendier way to say liberal. So I'm all about being trendy.
I feel like they've probably done some focus groups on the word liberal, and they must have got some negative feedback from it. And they think maybe if you use the word progressive, it sounds maybe a little more forward thinking, a little more hip, maybe it resonates more. I think in some ways, it anymore if like you call somebody a liberal, maybe it could be conceived as an insult.
Right. Now we got to
progress. So now if you progress, oh, you're a progressive. Oh, that's a compliment. Why, thank you.
Right. We have to progress to a future society where America is totally balkanized and in our major cities, people freely shit in the streets and do heroin, because if that's not progress, then I want no part of it, because that's the future I want my children to enjoy in. I want my kids to be eating avocado toast and drinking a chai latte as they watch some homeless man defecate onto the sidewalk and stab a random bystander with a used heroin needle that's most likely infected with AIDS, as they do in San Francisco, or so I hear. I don't know. But I just know it's very progressive, and I want to be progressive. So
we got to get hip.
We got to get hip. Maybe this was a little too hardcore for the listening base, but I'm that progressive.
We don't sugarcoat.
No, we don't. We don't have time. We don't have the luxury of sugarcoating things.
We say what needs said. We're not afraid of our opinions.
Yeah. Hey, listen, I think we should give our listeners a treat. If you make it to this far into the episode, you should get, some real talk.
I agree. And I'll say this. I know some coworkers are dying. They've been on me. They've been wanting a podcast. So I'm sure I'll hear all about this tomorrow.
I hope your brother Tommy listens to this, right?
He still does.
I hope Tommy does. This is directed at Tommy. Like, Tommy, this is the future you choose, right? It's a binary option. You pick the loudmouth tweeting Trump, right, who's rude and makes you feel uncomfortable, and you don't want to bring his name up at dinner parties. Or you pick the future with the heroin needles on the sidewalks, right? This is your pick. I know which one I pick. I know which one Sloppy Bob Hagen picks. I don't know which one Tommy picks. I think Tommy's a smart guy, but I don't know.
I would have thought Tommy would have taken more of a liking to Trump because of the Space Force.
Yeah.
My brother's very into science, and I thought for sure the Space Force would be the thing that drags them into the fold, but hasn't worked out thus far. Yeah. Tom, there's still time.
There's still time.
There's still time to come to the dark side.
Yeah, just you could at all your dinner parties and hoity-toity Canfield or Austintown or wherever he lives in, you can still say, "Oh, I just can't stand that man, Trump. He just tweets too much." But when you're in the ballot box alone, and there's Trump or there's Elizabeth Warren or whoever, you put that X down and we don't have to tell anybody. It could be our secret, Tom.
Exactly. Yeah, he never has to tell anybody.
No.
Between him and whomever. And he can continue to say he hates him, but deep down he knows he supported him.
Yeah, absolutely.
I like it. All right. So that'll be the end of our episode. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in. If you have any questions, feel free. Shoot them at us on Facebook, on Twitter. I'm trying to do a little bit more tweeting now, especially as we head into 2020. I definitely want to do more articles on some different things, especially politically. So if anybody ever wants to write anything like that, I'm certainly open to having other people write on there. If something grinds your gears, by all means, let me know. But if anybody has any topics for future episodes, let us know. We're working on trying to get, if not a liberal or a progressive on our next podcast, somebody there's somebody I know who is interested, who's a conservative that did not vote for Trump, who I think would be an interesting one to kind of get into the mind of one of those never – I won't even say he's a never Trumper, but he's one of those ones that pretty much predicted the other day on Twitter that he wholeheartedly believes Donald Trump's going to win quite handily in 2020, not in a landslide, but at least handily in 2020 as a result of this impeachment charade that's taking place in D.C. So we might have him on the next episode, but regardless, we're working on that. Try to get some fresh, new opinions on the show as well, because I think that will really help help the program out.
I think that'll be great. If you're liberal and you think we're morons and you want to tell us, if you're Bob Hagen or Jacob Herver and you don't know how the commodity markets work, but you're too busy, you know, there's not enough orders to ride the bike around in downtown Youngstown. And now that the Tim Ryan campaign's over, you don't know what to do with your free time. Give us a call. We'll put you on the air. We'll be respectful. We don't shout down our opponents. We believe in freedom of speech. So you can get on there. And it'll be a spicy episode. I'm telling you, if you disagree with us and you hate us, if you hate me and the sound of my voice, let Michael Menzinger know. We'll get you on the air and it's going to be great.
Let's do it, people. I'm sure there's people out there. We grind their gears with a lot of our opinions. So feel free. Let us know. We'll be happy to have you on. But thank you, Dane, for another enjoyable episode. There's a lot of good discussion in this one. And thank you, everybody, for tuning in. We're a few days away from Christmas, so Merry Christmas to you and your family. Dane, and before you know it, it'll be 2020, and we'll have a lot to talk about.
Merry Christmas, and don't forget the reason for the season is that Jesus was born, and he died for all of our sins.
That's
what
right.
A great God we have.
That's Amen. Right. All righty.
Okay, thanks.
See
guys.
Everybody. Thank you very Bye. Much. Bye.